Hi, this is Jim from Safety Words. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity, the Safety Wars for Thursday, November 21st, 2024. A lot going on in the last 24 hours. World War III going on here. If I had to pick a day when World War III started, probably be today. Waiting for the video to kick in. Very frustrating. Hold on, everybody here. For some reason, our broadcasting system locked out here. And I tell you what. There. Okay, I'm just gonna say. What exactly is the plan going on with Ukraine? Because today, Vladimir Putin sent on over a, it was very early this morning, sent over a ICBM, nuclear capable, was loaded with conventional warheads, apparently as a show of force. I'm going to read portions of his speech here today, and we're going to go from there. I mean, I'm just completely shocked that this is happening. Something that I thought we put behind us in 1991, right? Inevitably, I don't know, maybe James Cameron had some insight with Terminator movies, right? That took place in 1984, right? And they said, well, in 40 years, this is what's going to happen. Nuclear war. With the machines. God willing, right? God willing, the cooler heads will prevail. And we're not going to get involved in stuff. So, basically, this is from AP News here. Putin taps Russia's new missile and delivers a menacing word to NATO. The new ballistic missile fired by Russia struck a military industrial facility in central Ukrainian city of Dnipro. But its real mission was delivering a deadly new message to NATO. After Thursday's strike touched off a debate over whether the Ukrainian plant was hit by an intercontinental ballistic missile, President Vladimir Putin made a surprise appearance on Russian television. All right, so I have the transcript right here. And this is Putin talking, not Jim Polzel. Jim Polzel was reading it, but this was his statement. I want to update the personnel of the Russian armed forces, the citizens of our country, our friends throughout the world, and those who continue to harbor illusions about the possibility of inflicting a strategic defeat on Russia, about the events that are taking place today in the zone of the special military operation. Specifically, following the use of Western-made long-range weapons on our territory. All right, so earlier this week we reported. Yes, I know. I didn't get out the podcast. It's been crazy. I've been, believe it or not, I was doing training for a Ukrainian work crew last night. That's why I wasn't here. Continuing the course of escalating the Ukraine conflict, which was originally provoked by the West, the United States and its NATO allies announced that they are authorizing the use of their long-range precision-guided weapons systems on the territory of the Russian Federation. And it is well known to experts on the Russian side has repeatedly emphasized that it is impossible to use such weapons without the direct involvement of military specialists from the countries that produce them. And it goes on as to what happened. ATACMS were launched. UK-made Storm Shadows were launched. And they landed in Russia. Our air defense systems repelled these attacks. As a result, the goals that were obviously set by the enemy were not achieved. A fire at an ammunition depot in the Bryansk region caused by the fall of ATACMS missile debris was extinguished, and there were no casualties or serious damage. In the Kursk region, an attack was carried out on one of the command posts of our North Troop Group. As a result of the attack and air defense combat, there are unfortunately casualties, dead and wounded among the personnel of the facility's external security units and maintenance personnel. The command and operational staff of the control center were not wounded and are operating normally. Managing our troops' actions to destroy and expel enemy units from the Kursk region. Once again, I would like to emphasize that the use of such weapons by the enemy is not able to affect the course of combat operations in the zone of the special military operation. Our troops are successfully advancing along the entire front line. All the goals we have set will be accomplished. In response to the use of American-British long-range weapons, the Russian armed forces launched a combined strike on a facility of the Ukrainian defense industrial complex. They tested one of Russia's newest intermediate-range missile systems in combat conditions. In this case, a ballistic missile with a non-nuclear hypersonic configuration. Our missile engineers named it Orshnik. Don't know what it is. The tests were carried out successfully. The goal of the launch was achieved on the territory of Ukraine in the city of Dnipropetrovsk. Dnipro in Ukrainian, one of the largest industrial complexes, well known since the days of the Soviet Union, which still produces missile equipment and other weapons, was hit. We are developing intermediate-range and shorter-range missiles that are a response to the United States' plans to produce and deploy intermediate-range and shorter-range missiles in Europe and the Asia-Pacific region. We believe that the United States made a mistake by unilaterally breaking the Intermediate-Range Nuclear Forces Treaty in 2019 under far-fetched pretexts. Today, the United States not only produces such equipment, but as we can see, is deploying its advanced missile systems to different regions of the world, including Europe, during training exercises for its troops. Moreover, through such drills, they are conducting training on how to use them. I remind you that Russia has voluntarily and unilaterally committed itself not to deploy intermediate and shorter-range missiles so long as U.S. weapons of this kind do not appear anywhere in the world. I repeat, the tests of the Orshnik missile system in combat conditions are being conducted by U.S. as a response, are being conducted by us, I'm sorry, as a response to aggressive actions of NATO countries against Russia. And it goes on and on. Okay. So basically, this is what it comes down to. Of course, when we choose, if necessary, as retaliatory measure targets to be hit by systems on a Ukrainian territory, we will warn civilians in advance and also ask the citizens of friendly states who are there to leave the danger zones. We will do this for humanitarian reasons, openly, publicly, and without fear of countermeasures from the enemy will also receive this information. Why without fear? Okay, here we go. Why without fear? Because as of today, there are no means of counteracting such a weapon. These missile attack targets at a speed of Mach 10, which is 2.5 to 3 kilometers, that's 1.6, 1.9 miles for you in the United States, I added that, per second. So you're going potentially almost 2 miles per second. Modern air defense systems and U.S. systems in Europe cannot intercept such missiles. It is impossible. I emphasize once again, it is not Russia, but the United States that has destroyed the system of international security. It is pushing the entire world towards global conflict by continuing to fight and cling on to its hegemony. We have always referred to and now are ready to resolve all disputed questions with peaceful means, but we are also ready for any scenario. If anyone doubts that, they are wrong. There will always be a response. We're going to go to commercial break, and let's think on that here for a minute.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop 3. That hazard. In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
I don't know. What do you folks out there think? I'm going to continue to report on this stuff because I tell you what. Usually this is where we get. Vladimir Putin said something today and said that blah, 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 blah. I want to give you the full story here. I mean, we're on very late at night, and we got other things going on. We could, you know, I'm sure I can line up some guests who are a little bit more knowledgeable than me on this stuff. But I'm just going to read the reports as they come out here with this. So my translation of this is like this. They're showing us that they have a defense. Right now, there's no defense for what they could do. So, if you've been following the news over the last 8 to 10 years that these weapons have been out, these hypersonic weapons, you know that we do not have a defense against them. Right? So, traveling pretty fast there with that. I don't know. What are we going to do? Do you like the old Nike missile systems, or are you going to send a nuclear weapon to destroy a nuclear weapon? How's that going to work out? There. Now, this is along the way of what you can do. Safety is not without, right? We're not about zero. Right? I had a discussion with that with our Ukrainian class last night where we were teaching MEWOPs, right? It's not zero. So we have safeguards, we have defense. One of the safeguards and everything else that we have is good governance, trusting our leaders to do the right thing. I don't know if we can necessarily do that on this subject anymore. I'm sorry to say. Why are they escalating this? And these conspiracy theories are out there where our government is escalating this because the current administration is going to be out on 2 months from today at 12 noon, I think it is. Something like that. January 20th, 21st. A friend of this program, I'm not going to mention his name here without his permission, but he is a friend of the program, was one of the people who were selling arms to Ukraine legally from this country, U.S. source. He was a broker. And he was kibosh. They put the kibosh on it. Who's they? The Obama administration, because allegedly a Biden-linked firm got the contract, not the friend of our program here, who lives over in Chestnut Ridge, in New York. I don't know what to make out of this. I don't know what to do about it. I don't know what to think about it. But I do know this: disaster preparation. We have that need here, right? Three to 4 days in a nuclear conflict. I don't know how that's going to work out, but you don't know what situation you're going to be in. Like I mentioned the other day, are you going to be in like the day after tomorrow, where everything in a area where it's going to get nuked and you're vaporized, or are you going to be in like the movie Testament, where you're in the middle of nowhere, you don't get nuked, and you live out for a period of time until everything catches up there? We'll have a program on this in the very near future, I assure you. The markets are going nuts, a lot of them. Gold, silver, Bitcoin. Right between the election and everything else, here they're going haywire. Do we get our financial house in order? I don't know how would it play out. This is where science fiction comes into good use. There was a TV series in the late 2000s, 2007, 2008, 2009. You can get it on a couple of streaming platforms called Jericho, where they had a situation like this, a limited nuclear exchange that turned out to be caused by a massive conspiracy. And it showed what some of the things might be. Stresses to the economy, the breakup of the United States, things of that nature. Maybe, right? And good science fiction is a what if type of thing. What if this happens? What if this happens? Twilight Zone was, the original Twilight Zone especially, was famous for this. When you want to talk about AI and the ability of the AI, Star Trek The Next Generation was phenomenal on the predictions of what we have to deal with today with AI. So that's what my thing is. Call your congressman, call your senators, call the White House. Prepare your family. Be reasonable. Don't be like some of these cults that are out there in the past that were, that were doing things, you know, sell your house and all this other stuff. That's not what we're about here. We're about preparation. We're about reasonable precautions. And with that, we're going to take our next break. I'm going to set up the next part of the program.
This is going to blow your mind. There's a new daytime talk show on your local cable access station. What happens when safety, scandal, and heartbreak collide? Welcome to Safety Wars, the talk show. Today's episode is a doozy. Imagine confronting your unsafe supervisor who just happens to be your ex-wife's new hubby. Talk about a powder keg. But wait, there's more. We've got an exclusive interview with a corporate exec who's taken out life insurance policies on his riskiest workers, hoping to cash in on a deadly mishap. Yup, you heard that right. It's a real-life plot twist you can't make up. Tune in as Jim Posel, CSP, our very own Jerry Springer of Safety, dives deep into this explosive confrontation. Sparks will fly and secrets will be exposed. Catch the full episode on Safety Wars on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform. Don't miss out on the drama that could save your life. Like and share now, and stay safe, folks.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's Safety Today.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Posel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
Want to avoid hefty OSHA fines and keep your team safe? Let's dive into the General Duty Clause. The General Duty Clause, Section 5, A1, of the OSHA Act of 1970, is a catch-all rule to cover unregulated hazards. Employers must keep workplaces free from recognized dangers that could cause death or serious harm. For OSHA to cite you under the General Duty Clause, they must prove the following four things. 1. The employer failed to render its workplace free of a hazard. 2. An employee was exposed to that hazard. 3. That hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. And 4. Feasible means exist to free the workplace of the hazard. Employees aren't off the hook either. Section 5B mandates they follow all safety standards. Both employers and employees must work together to maintain a safe work environment. Examples: think lifting above shoulder height repeatedly or working without proper support. Stay proactive. Monitor work areas, apply the four-part test, and you'll prevent those nasty citations and keep everyone safe. Need help? And more information? Contact Jim Posel and the Safety Wars team to help you prevent workplace incidents, conduct safety audits and training. Contact the Safety Wars team at jim@safetywars.com or 845-269-5772. Visit us on the web at www.safetywars.com. Let's build a safer workplace together.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
All right, so here we have a lovely commute, by the way. I had something to take care of in Brooklyn today, and it literally took me 4 hours to get home here. So, lovely, lovely, lovely. So this was on the news all day today. And by the way, thankfully, we got an appreciable amount of rain today. I don't know what the final totals are, but it had to be at least 1 or 2 inches of rain. And we need something like 12 inches of rain in this region, some areas less or more over about a two-week period, so we don't have flooding to get out of this drought. We'll see how that happens. It's supposed to be raining all next week here. Hopefully, all these forest fires will go bye-bye. This is from Stony, Long Island homeowners say FEMA denied their request for help after devastating summer storms. Dozens of Suffolk County homeowners are shocked after they say FEMA denied their request for aid after storms caused devastating damage in August. 10 inches of rain fell in that storm. The governor, who applied for a major disaster declaration for homeowners, has 30 days to appeal the denial. Houses are destroyed and everything else. Here, so they're looking, and you know, people are struggling here. We went over this a while back on applying for FEMA aid, right? And we had on the applications here and everything that we shared on the air with that. Not easy. You have, right, to get an actual loan with that, the Small Business Administration has to, you have to go through them, for they're the ones who handle FEMA loans. And what ended up happening, right, and what ended up happening was, with us, we applied for a FEMA loan and were denied. We had a significant amount of damage in our basement with that. Now, I don't understand what the context is here, but we're going to go over to the FEMA webpage right now. And they have some reasons here with that. Well, common reasons FEMA may find you ineligible for a loan. So this is a release date, September 19, 2024. A letter from FEMA stating you are ineligible for disaster assistance may not be a final decision. Sometimes FEMA just needs more info or supporting documentation from you. Here are some common reasons applicants are deemed ineligible. Reason one, you haven't sent FEMA the documents or information requested. Read your FEMA letter carefully and thoroughly and send FEMA the information requested. If that information is not available, let FEMA know why. Now, my suggestion in part of your disaster preparation stuff is download some of these forms, find out the information you need, and make sure that information is on hand and updated periodically, and keep that in a safe place. That's not going to get destroyed or flooded or anything like that. With that. So if you... So have everything update ahead of time. Reason two, your damage or loss is covered by insurance or other sources. By law, FEMA cannot duplicate assistance received from other sources. If you receive funding from insurance, crowdfunding, local or state programs, or financial assistance from voluntary agencies, FEMA cannot cover those same expenses. If you receive funds from other sources, send FEMA documentation showing how those funds were used. The documentation must prove the funds you receive were not enough to cover your disaster-related expenses or that the funds are intended to be used for another purpose. Now, I don't have any special knowledge here, but based on all the media reports I've heard, this one might, now that we're reading this, this one might be a reason why you get denied a FEMA fund. Because a lot of these people were sent checks for $50,000. Now, my question is this. Why is it that we have all these professional reporters out there all day reporting on this? And they mentioned that a lot of these people receive $50,000 stuff for the disaster assistance, blah, 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 blah. Right? Why couldn't they come over here and say, well, look, FEMA might say that. Or why didn't FEMA say, look, go over to our webpage, right, FEMA.gov, fact sheet, common sense visas, FEMA may find you ineligible for assistance, blah, 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 here, we have it right here, and maybe this is why. All right, reason three, more than one application filed for your household. Typically, FEMA allows only one application for housing assistance for household or address. FEMA can verify you were their homeowner. FEMA asks for proof of ownership from disaster survivors who apply for financial assistance to help with repairs to their damaged homes. FEMA verifies the ownership using public and government records or by reviewing documents you submit. FEMA may also verify ownership at the time of inspection of damaged property. Right? And this is what they suggest you have. Deed or title, mortgage document, homeowner's insurance and statements, property tax receipt or tax bill, manufactured home certificate or title. I guess that's for a trailer or something similar to that. Home purchase contracts, example, bill of sale, last will and testament and death certificate naming you the heir of the property. Reason five, FEMA was unable to verify your occupancy. So you may have a property not occupied, may not, you know, maybe vacant property. Reason six, FEMA cannot verify your identity. Right? These are all things people may lose in a disaster. The damaged home was not your primary residence. FEMA provides disaster assistance to eligible applicants for a primary residence. Where you live for more than 6 months of the year, FEMA will not consider more than one primary residence for survivors and their spouse. Reason eight, insufficient damage to be eligible for FEMA assistance. Right, so de minimis stuff doesn't really matter. So they list damaged non-essential areas, landscaping, or spoiled food. Reason 9, FEMA inspection vector was unable to reach you at the contact information provided. Going on and on and on. So why couldn't that, you know, let's not go around and say, well, those bastards at FEMA didn't do X, Y, and Z. And now there's reports that they ran out of money and everything else, which probably are true, right? However, why don't we add a little bit of context here? People are already angry at the government. Why don't we try to be peacemakers and try to get along, get to the context, because context drives behavior with this. All right. Heading on over to OSHA. Let's do a share screen on that. All right. This is from OSHA news releases, November 2024. We got one over this the other day with the New Jersey Bakery in Patterson. So beat the heat. We have winners, and it was basically photos of people doing regular things in the shade, taking a break. That was basically it. With them, there are good pictures, too. With that, OSHA to hold online public meeting of Maritime Advisory Committee on Occupational Safety and Health on December 3rd. U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration announced today that the Maritime Advisory Committee on Occupational Safety and Health will hold an online public meeting on December 3rd from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. After the full committee meets, the shipyard and longshore working groups will meet online from 10:30 to 12 p.m. The meeting will include reports from the shipyard and longshore work groups and a presentation on OSHA's National Emphasis Program on Falls and National Stand Down to Prevent Falls, and a presentation from NIOSH on emerging technology in the maritime industry. Registered on the MACOSH webpage to attend and receive a link to join the meeting with that. And other information, check out the website. We have here Department of Labor seeks nominations. Nominees for Maritime Advisory Committee on Occupational Safety and Health by January 6th. The U.S. Department of Labor is seeking membership nominations for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's Maritime Advisory Committee. Committee nominees should have a strong interest in the safety and health of workers in the shipyard, longshoring, and commercial fishing industries. The Secretary of Labor will select 15 members. Who's going to be Secretary of Labor? Right. Members serve 15 people. Members serve a 2-year term beginning on the day of the secretary's appointment to the committee. The advisory committee meets twice per year. All right, and you could go and with that, let's see. Read the Federal Register notice for additional information, federal rulemaking, and let's see. I don't know. That's out of curiosity. Let's click on that and see what we get. And addresses further, right? And here we have a download a file. What does that say? Often, that could be dangerous. Okay, hold on. You know, basically everything in here, I was, you know, they have. Now, if you're interested in doing that. All right. Okay. It just gives you a copy of that. And no, it's worth it. If you're interested in that sort of thing, it's worth it. Okay. And let's do this now. Let's go on over to the news releases from the Department of Labor. This is these news releases are out there. I mean, they're for you. If you want to find out what the agency is doing, these are good. U.S. Department of Labor announces new research that underscores the benefits of paid family and medical leave. U.S. Department of Labor today announced the release of new research, a commission that found a national paid family and medical leave program will reduce poverty across all communities and diminish the poverty gap among workers, especially Black and Hispanic workers, who experience some of the highest poverty rates. The department's Women's Bureau commissioned the research from the Urban Institute, which includes a report analyzing the potential effect of a universal national paid family and medical leave policy would have on America's workers, a literature review on the impacts of paid leave, and a brief on the impact of state paid leave policies on taxes. Research also includes four specific state-specific reports estimating the costs and benefits of proposed paid family and medical leave policies. Only 13 states and the District of Columbia currently have a paid family and medical leave program. 27 as of March 2023, only 27% of civilian workers had access to paid family leave. And it goes on and on and on. I know in some states there is like a pool that you, employers have to pay into for this. Signature Health takes multiple actions to improve safety after U.S. Department of Labor investigation of a Maple Heights stabbing. Again, this is one of the focus areas. I don't know how I don't know if this is an emphasis, but program, but investigators with OSHA learned that the patient stabbed an employee repeatedly with a knife the patient brought into the facility in Maple Heights. Despite the risk of injury, the facility's lone security guard and other co-workers were able to stop the attack from continuing. Since this disturbing incident, the company has worked diligently with OSHA to improve its safety programs and has enacted measures to reduce the likelihood of future incidents, said OSHA Area Director Howard Everts in Cleveland. A comprehensive workplace violence prevention program requires screening procedures, effective employee training, and immediate reviews of incidents and near-miss incidents to address risks and ensure continual process improvement. After the investigation, they received citations for including the general duty clause, which we just played a while back. The whole explanation. Signature Health entered into a settlement agreement with OSHA, in which it has agreed to pay a penalty of $16,131. That's the max for a general duty clause violation, an initial thing, serious. In the last 6 months since the incident, Signature Health has implemented the following actions: install weapons detection system, hire risk consultation specialists, reviews its procedures, establish a position focused on workplace violence prevention and emergency response, aka safety professional, strengthen its workplace violence prevention program by updating policies and procedures such as the weapon response and preparedness procedure, conduct employees on how objects other than known weapons such as guns and knives can be used as weapons, establish workplace violence committees, and add signage stating no weapons are allowed. I tell you what, that signage works every time, right? No weapon, just like the fallout shelter ones prevent nuclear attacks. I know, maybe we'll get it. I don't know. So let's dive in and see what they have here. So normally, with a general duty clause violation, they have to prove the case that there was a way of preventing this, right? Of preventing this. So with that, right, goes on and on. Citation 191 serious, and this is 16,131, the max for a serious violation. OSH Act of 1970, Section 5A1, the employer did not furnish employment in a place of employment free or from recognized hazards that were causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm to employees, and that employees are exposed to the hazard of patient on staff violence, including being physically assaulted by patients utilizing weapons. On or about April 24, 2024, and at times continuing thereafter, the employer failed to ensure that healthcare providers are protected against life-threatening injuries from patient-on-staff violence, including but not limited to patients harboring and or utilizing weapons. During a mental health appointment, a caretaker was assaulted by a patient and stabbed multiple times with a knife that was brought into the facility without detection. The assault resulted in the patient inpatient hospitalization of the employee with face and upper body wounds. Hopefully they make a complete recovery on that. Feasible means of abatement include but are not limited to. So they have to state the case, what you didn't do, right? What happened? What and now how you're going to solve it. Develop, document, and implement a comprehensive workplace violence prevention program that includes engineering, administration, and work practice controls. That's your hierarchy of controls. Among other provisions, the program should include management commitment and employee participation, worksite analysis and hazard identifications, such as workspace configuration, weapons of opportunity like furniture, keyboard, scissors, letter openers, etc. Hazard prevention and control, such as flagging disruptive patients, safety and health training, reporting, record-keeping, post-incident investigation procedures, program evaluation and audits. Revised document, and number two, revised document implement, and we won't go through all of them, and maintain security procedures for patients entering the facility. Such procedures shall include, but not limited to, zero-tolerance policies, ensuring all persons entering the facility are screened for weapons, beyond visually scanning the persons as using non-invasive weapon screening techniques like handheld metal detection wands or static pass-through metal detectors. Three, train all current and new non-supervisor and supervisor employees on Signature Health's comprehensive workplace violence plans and its procedures, 16,131. Citation 2, item 1, other than serious, the employer did not report within 24 hours a work-related incident resulting in an inpatient hospitalization, amputation, or loss of an eye. 11,524, signed by Mr. Everts. Now, let's say that you are a safety professional, right? Let's say you're a safety professional, and you work at one of these facilities, or you are a employee at one of these facilities, or you know an employee at one of these facilities. Good idea would be to print this out, right? If you do have safety, professionals or as a committee or something, and show it. Hey, did you hear about this? What happened here? That blah blah blah. They got fined $27,000, and documented. By the way, document it, because this way, if there is an issue and you get attacked, now you have proof that they knew about it. And at that point, hey, they knew that there was a requirement, general duty clause. Now OSHA doesn't look, if there's an incident, OSHA doesn't look too fondly on that, to say the least. Now, unfortunately, if you work in a state facility, the state enforcement against its own people and the regulation against their own employees is not so good, in my experience, because the biggest, when I see people, you know, family members, friends, I belong to several organizations, and the biggest thing that I hear about is, Jim, I'm a teacher. Jim, I work in a hospital, a state hospital. Jim, I work in a prison. Jim, I work as a corrections officer. Jim, I work as a police officer. And they're not doing this. They're letting this happen and everything else. And my response is always, you have a union, number one. Number two, you have you have all different kinds of stuff and resources. You have a union, you have safety people, you have in New York Pesh, make a report with it. I don't get it, to be perfectly honest with you, why they don't take this stuff seriously, right? One of the things I like to do, right, when I want to do something completely and totally mindless, I watch TikTok videos, and it's usually you know, either a police encounter or court, right, sort of thing, and you see people making fools out of themselves in court and on the police videos and everything else. And we'll just say they have the legal authority, right? The courts have the legal authority. Police have the legal authority. Now, the question has an answer, especially with what's going on here with stuff in the news we read before. Do they have the moral authority? And your own organization, yeah, you may have the legal authority, the legal responsibility, the job description, what have you, but do you have the moral authority? Well, what do you mean, Jim? Okay, and I deal with this all the time. Supervisors not wearing appropriate PPE. Well, what do you mean, Jim? They're not wearing PPE at all. So you get the supervisors coming out without hard hats. You get safety professionals coming out of going out in the field without hard hats. You get or other PPE disobeying procedures and everything. Now you're in a kind of like an awkward position. Now I got to enforce the rules on somebody else. I have to uphold these standards, but then I'm not doing it. And what's one of the easiest ways to become a leader is to follow your own rules. And the other thing is, if you're a leader, don't make a rule that you're not going to follow. And if your leadership is not following rules, you break out and you say, look, here is the paperwork. And here's the paper. It says here in the safety plan, X, Y, and Z. We will do X, Y, and Z. We're not doing it. We're going to have a problem called a willful violation from OSHA. Something happens. It puts us at a big liability. And if they tell you to go F yourself, which is normally what happens, you now have a whistleblower complaint. Unfortunately, it takes around 800 days to get through the process. Again, just from recent corporate experience with me, it's been, now thank God I dot my I's and cross my T's on all this stuff. I have my people do that because some of the recent experience I've had, it was a complete and total nightmare if I did not document what people were doing, right, or with anything, and what they were told. One of them was competent persons. Make sure you identify in writing who that competent person is out on the job site. And if it ain't you, it ain't you. Make it not you, especially if you're a third-party safety consultant. It's just the way it is. Now, over the weekend, I did something very stupid. What did I do that was so stupid? I watched Sunday morning news programs because I took a little... I had a little siesta this weekend, the last couple of days. And I'm going to go back and we're going to talk about what that was and some of my thoughts here on that. And we're going to wrap things up then. So we're going to go to our final commercial break, and we'll do that. Here's a message from Jay Allen.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War Show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
Hey there, safety professionals. Welcome to another episode of Safety Wars on Safety FM, hosted by Jim Posel, and today we're diving into what it really means to be on the front lines of the safety war. So, let's start with the basics. Safety is not just a set of rules or regulations. It's a culture, a mindset, a way of life. When we talk about safety, we're not just protecting workers from harm. We're building an environment where everyone can thrive. It's about going home safe and sound to our families every single day. Now, I know it sounds like a heavy responsibility, but that's why we're here. To make sure everyone understands the importance of safety and knows how to implement it effectively. Whether you're a seasoned safety professional or just starting out, there's always something new to learn. Let's talk about some key strategies. First up, communication. It's critical to ensure that everyone on the team is on the same page. Regular safety meetings, clear signage, and open dialogue can prevent a lot of accidents before they even happen. Next, let's focus on training. Proper training equips your team with the knowledge and skills they need to stay safe. Remember, it's not just about ticking a box. It's about making sure every worker understands the why behind each safety protocol. This understanding fosters a culture of safety where everyone looks out for one another. Of course, we can't forget about technology. From wearable safety devices to advanced monitoring systems, technology is revolutionizing how we approach safety. Embrace it. Use these tools to enhance your safety programs and keep your team protected. But let's not get too comfortable. Safety is an ongoing battle. New risks and challenges emerge all the time. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and never stop striving for a safer workplace. So, what's the takeaway? Safety is everyone's responsibility. It's about creating a culture where safety is ingrained in everything we do. As safety professionals, it's our job to lead by example and inspire our teams to commit to a safer future. Thanks for tuning into Safety Wars on Safety FM. Stay safe out there, and remember, every day is a new opportunity to make a difference. Catch you on the next episode.
All right, so. All right, here we have. All right. Now, I made the mistake of watching the Sunday morning news programs and yelling at the TV and everything else. Because one of, and it's not important who said this. But it was, right, they talked about social contract. And the incoming administration has to have, no, there's a social contract with this. And sort of like I consider the phrase social contract to be like the phrase situational awareness. No, what the hell does it really mean? You have to have situational awareness. It's like situational awareness is there to beat people up, you know, to beat them up. Another way to blame the employee and deflect blame from management and from other, not, and I don't want to say management versus worker, but basically people are out there. They, you know, they're not aware what goes on in the field. And this saves paperwork. I tell you what, every time that I have to review a accident report for a client or one of my people does, that's what my people know not to do this. I do not ever want to see the words lack of situational awareness on any document because it's useless. It ends the discussion. Well, he wasn't situationally aware. Well, the same thing applies to social contract. Well, when someone doesn't like the other side in politics, what do they always whip out? Well, this is not part of the social contract. This is now, in my experience, when I sign a contract, it means I'm giving you some types of something, and you're giving me something. So I sign a contract for safety services. I'm providing whatever the safety service is. You are providing the venue, and you're paying for it. That's a contract. You don't pay, then that's a problem. I don't do the service, that's a problem. So, okay, that's a contract. So here, what is social contract? A social contract is a philosophical concept and theory that explores the agreement among individuals in a society to form and maintain a government or organized society, often with the implicit or explicit understanding that certain rights and freedoms will be exchanged for protection and order. The idea is foundational in political philosophy and has been articulated by many different people, right? So we have some of the great philosophers here. Thomas Hobbes, John Locke, Jean-Jacques Rousseau. All right. Now, that's all on the basis of our democracy here. Now, here's what the issue, right? There are four key aspects. You have mutual agreement. You have purpose. You have the rights and duties of everybody and legitimacy of authority. So you make, remember, legitimacy authority is from, is also included in the Declaration of Independence for the United States, where you have the rights of the people, right? The government's legitimacy comes from the consent of the governed. If the government fails to uphold the social contract, citizens may withdraw their consent or seek change. Okay, now, my question is this. Okay, this is thrown apart. Well, when one side does like, well, the, well this is like the end all of the deal. They violated the social contract. Well, or you have often a government official. In this case, it was a government official. A citizen violated the social contract. Well, how many times does the government violate social contracts? Lack of security and everything else. We just had an election here. Regardless of how you feel that it turned out, people are a little bit pissed. One side is pissed. Everyone's pissed off. That's obvious. But one side is really pissed off here. Right? But what? No, you have a responsibility with everybody else, even though the contract goes both ways. You have to have responsible governance. You have to have responsible citizenship. You break either one of them, you have a problem. What am I saying? Why am I rambling? I'm just venting a little bit here. It's just a little bit aggravating to hear people throw things around that sound like amazing concepts here that they don't really, that normal person doesn't know. So they sound intelligent. But then again, I have a one-hour-long monologue 3 to 5 times a week. So, you know, who am I to talk here? Mutual agreement, right? And it's, right, if you don't participate in a democracy, it's kind of hard to participate here in a mutual agreement. Because then you find out, again, this is where it's coming, what's happening now, especially in the libertarian movement. And when I was involved in politics, I did not consent to any of this stuff. You get that from young people. And I think you're going to have that issue come, and it's already coming to fruition. We did not agree to have all of this government debt. Where did this, and this is what the problem is. There may be a time when they just say, screw it, we're not paying any of the bills. Right? Purpose, right? To create order, prevent chaos, and protect individuals. Guess what? They did not, right? What's going on here? To ensure collective well-being and promote justice. Both sides guilty of this. Comes down to this, moral authority. Do they have the moral authority to do anything when they break the laws? This is why it's important you need to enforce the laws, especially against government officials that are corrupt. This is why it's important to vote, because that's one way that the government says we're not going to prosecute, because if you didn't like that, the person's in office, you could have been voted out, or she could have been voted out, and everything else. What's my point? My point is participate. My point is don't point the finger that other people have to, there's, are violating some type of social contract. And number three, you're foisting a social contract from bad governance from 2 or 3 generations ago and maybe 10 years ago on newborns here. It's not going to turn out well. As friend of the program, Murray Sabrin, he's been on here at least one time over the last 3 and a half years. Do you want to get hit by a truck or a bus? You know, we're going to get hit by either one, but that's what's going to happen here with the way things are going. And, be prepared. Be prepared. That's all I have to say. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. I hope to be back here tomorrow. If not, I will see you hopefully Monday of next week. Definitely not Tuesday. I will be with at a high school reunion. So I will catch you later.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Close.